Well, hi, folks. It's been said that good leaders need to be able to tell great stories. And actually, some would go so far as to say that's how you differentiate a leader is by the stories they tell. Today, we're going to explore what that means. And if that's something you're wanting to add to your leadership toolkit, we're going to give you some tips and ideas.
You're listening to Leadership Powered by Common Sense with your host, Doug Thorpe. Here's Doug.
Welcome, everyone. This is another episode of Leadership Powered by Common Sense. I am your host, Doug Thorpe, and today I have Michael McRae visiting with me. Michael, how are you doing, man?
I'm doing all right, Doug. It's great to be here. I really appreciate the opportunity to join you.
Yeah. Tell everybody where you're calling in from.
I'm in Santa Clara, California, which is just, it's in Silicon Valley, close to San Jose.
Nice. And I bet the weather's pretty good over there right now.
Always. You know, we moved here in June of last year from Nashville, Tennessee, and the first 4 months we were here, it didn't rain at all, which was actually disconcerting because, of course, it's, you know, a drought. And I have a two-year-old, and when it finally rained last fall, he went outside and he like kind of looked up and he just put his hands up in the air and was just kind of like, and he just was like, wah-wah, sky. And he was just, I was like, yes, water does come out of the sky. You wouldn't know that living in a drought, but it does come out of the sky. Yeah.
That's great. Well, thanks for joining us here. And as I kind of teased on the front end, we're going to talk about storytelling for leaders. But first, I always like to ask, how did you kind of get into this? What's your journey been about up to this point?
Yeah, my family has been telling stories for as long as I can remember. My grandmother was kind of the family storyteller. She and my granddad traveled all over the world for his work. He was an archaeologist and a New Testament professor. And so she told us just all these amazing travel stories when I was a kid. And so I grew up with this love of stories and really learned the power of stories from my dad, who was a medical doctor. And he told these he was a doctor in rural Appalachia in East Tennessee, and I had some opportunities to hear him tell some really moving stories of encounters with some of his patients, and to think about the impact that lifting up particular stories can have, and how stories can shape our imagination, how stories inform our actions, that we don't always know what action to take until we have a story that gives us a sense of context or a sense of direction. I ended up studying history in college. And because my granddad was an archaeologist, he traveled a lot in Israel and in Palestine. And so I grew up going there and I got very interested in peace and peace building. And so I did a master's in conflict resolution. And in that, my kind of matured sense of storytelling really came into being as I was living in Northern Ireland, so I was studying conflict resolution in Belfast and looking at the way that storytelling was used as a tool to get former combatants into conversations with each other and how stories could shorten the distance between people and be used as a tool for transforming division. And so that encounter with the actual transformative power of storytelling, it lit something in me, you know, something came awake, and I came back from Belfast to Nashville with this real passion for using storytelling as a way to transform division, to build a sense of connection. There's a beautiful Irish phrase that I learned in Ireland. It says, in Irish, it goes, Erskó a chéile a waras na dhíne, which means it is in the shelter of each other that the people live. It's in the shelter of each other that the people live. And I found that storytelling was a pull for me to think about how do we create shelter in the world for each other. And so I started doing that a lot in social change circles and nonprofits. And in the last few years, I've been finding myself with an increased interest and new opportunities in kind of the corporate and larger organizational spheres and thinking about how do you use stories in leadership. I've used stories for empathy building, stories in entertainment, stories as advocacy, stories as healing. But what about stories as leadership? How do you use stories to create engagement and belief in what you're doing so that you can get people to take action?
Well, as I mentioned, I think in the realm of leadership development, there is a new awareness of the power of story. Some might say it started just with the simple idea of a leader needs to be able to craft a vision, but then explain the vision to the people. You could argue that's a kind of story they have to tell. And I think as people have turned to pursue some leadership development to kind of fill the gap in their own mind about how effective they might be leading their teams, they inevitably come on this challenge of, you know, can I learn how to tell a better story? Can I find some stories to tell that make sense and apply to the situation? I mean, some mm-hmm. people may say, I know a bunch of stories, but they sure don't fit at work. You know, I'm not supposed to be telling that kind of stuff at work.
And sometimes that's true. Like discernment is a really important storytelling skill as well. Right. But sometimes it's not true. Yeah.
Right. Right. So let's talk about that. Just sort of the basic starting point. Let me say it this way. A lot of times when I have a client, we start talking about this idea of adding storytelling to your leadership toolkit. They say, where in the world do I start? You know, my personality's not really aligned for that. I'm not extroverted. I don't entertain a crowd. You know what? How do I get started with this?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, one of the things that's important is to sell people on why stories matter in leadership. And, you know, there's research that suggests that you're up to 22 times more likely to remember something that you learned through a story than through something that was given to you in a presentation or as a didactic piece of information, a lecture. You know, it's one reason why if you watch TED Talks, you know, anywhere from a third to half of a TED Talk is them giving some kind of story, anecdote, illustration, because that's what will linger with people. So what I tell folks all the time is like, take the messages that you most need to communicate and put them into unforgettable stories, because if you want your message to stick, embedding it in a story is arguably the most effective way that you can do that. There's all kinds of fascinating science about why stories hook in the brain, the evolution of stories, how stories actually developed in the human brain. As a capacity primarily to navigate the world. We think a story sometimes is like, this is the way that we escape the world. We all turn to Netflix when things are stressful or whatever, and we're like, this is our escape. But the ability to tell stories emerged for humans as a way to specifically navigate the world. Like the first stories that would have been told would have been, hey, Doug, the other day, our friend, you know, Jerry went over to the field where there was those yellow berries. You remember you seen those yellow berries? He ate them and he got super sick and died, right? Like, don't eat the yellow berries. That was the purpose of stories, so that we could communicate our experiences to each other in order to avoid the mistakes that other people have made. So you could essentially live vicariously through other people's experiences. That's the purpose of a story. Now, we've evolved to make it all kinds of other things, but the brain, the human brain then, developed to hook on to story in a really intense way, because subconsciously, we're looking for what in this is going to help me navigate my world. That used to just be physically, what's going to keep me alive and away from the saber tooth. Now it's also, what's going to help me navigate my social world, my business environment. So there's this awareness that story has something for us. So one, it's like I always start by helping leaders see, one, this is a really essential skill in the sense that it's going to help your people learn what they need to learn. That's going to stick with them. And two, there is nobody on earth that can resist a good story, right? If you can tell a good story, people are going to listen. So it is a hardwired capability, both within people to tell and to be interested in. So if you can tap into this, you will have people's attention. So I often then start by just thinking through, like, what is the basic foundation of a good story? What do all good stories have? So, you know, there's a couple of ways to think about it. One, the Harvard Kennedy School talks about three things that every story has: a challenge, a choice, and an outcome. So stories are always narrating challenges that we deal with, the choices that we make in face of those challenges, and what happens as a result. Challenge, choice, and outcome. And in the workshop that I run called The Storytelling Leader, we have a wonderful tool called the Story Canvas, and we have four different pieces of a story. We call it the STAR model, that every story has a situation, a tension or some kind of trouble that happens, an action, and a result. And so when you can break them into really simple pieces like that, to think, I need to give some context in a situation. There's something, Margaret Atwood, I love this, the novelist Margaret Atwood says that a story is a pattern interrupted, right? Which is so simple and great, you know, that if I were to say, so yesterday I woke up 7 o'clock like always, and I had my breakfast and I went to work and I got all my work done and I came home and watched Netflix with my wife and went to sleep. You would likely be thinking, what was the point, right? Like, because there was nothing uninteresting, nothing really unexpected that happened. But if I were to say, yesterday I got up at 7, I had my breakfast and I went to work, and when I got there, my colleague David burst through the door and he said, oh my gosh, we got the proposal. Well, this is far more interesting, and it begins to actually feel like a story, because there's something unexpected that is happening now in this stream of events. So we have the situation, the trouble, the action, and the result. And most importantly, potentially for our actual for leadership communication, is this point of connection, which is this is why I've told you this story. Right? What's the point? This is where you're talking about people saying, oh, I don't have a good story for work. It's because they're not able to see the connection between their story and what the kind of the focus of the work is, or what point they're trying to make. And so whenever we're able to identify this point of connection to say, this is why I'm telling you this story, this is what I want you to take from it, this is the behavioral shift that I want to happen. And this is what I think most leaders are looking for when they're telling stories, is there's a behavior that you're wanting your team to have, or you're wanting your audience to have, you're wanting your customer to have. And so you want to tell a story that is highlighting that behavior as a model. Stories serve as models and kind of beacons for us. And so when you hold up the story, it's like the heliotropic principle in biology. Plants grow toward the sun. It's the same thing. If we can put the organizations grow toward the positive images and stories that we put in front of them. So when we can tell a story that says, this is what we're like at our best, this is what it looks like when we're collaborating, this is what it looks like when we're a team, organizations will begin to grow toward that.
I think part of the difficulty some people have trying to add that to their leadership toolkit is the idea that potentially some of the best stories are actually personal in nature. It's sort of revealing your own moment of epiphany when you discovered something, when you discovered a principle or a concept, or, you know, maybe you had an old boss that was a mentor that taught you something valuable that now applies to this moment. And there's this veil or wall of reluctance to kind of open up and share that. It's like some, maybe in their minds, are playing this game, like, I don't want to reveal that it's been a journey of growing for me to get here. And now if I start telling you my stories of how I did that, I somehow am now less than. And it's quite the opposite, right?
It is. It is the opposite. I was working with a musician a couple of years ago who wanted me to help them kind of revolutionize their About Me page on their website, the kind of Who Am I story. And the story was essentially just a list of facts about the different performances they had done and, you know, the different awards they had won. And they wanted it to feel different. And so I started asking questions like, well, tell me about the challenges that you faced in your journey. Was there ever a point where you wondered why you were doing this? Is there, you know, what has been the biggest obstacles or potential pushbacks against your journey? And his response was, I don't know that I feel that comfortable talking about my challenges. Like, I don't think that that's the look that I want. And it was to his detriment. We weren't able to do much to revolutionize his about page, because he wasn't actually willing to say anything that wasn't obvious to people. Like, and that's the thing. It's like humans love kind of the behind the scenes stuff. Right? We love that kind of content. We want to see how things get made. We have a fascination with not just seeing the production, the produced thing. We want to see the production process. How is this all working? And so I think leaders have this fear that if I show people that I've had to think through things and I've had to really work on this and I've made some mistakes, they'll respect me less. Quite the opposite is true, because most people's BS meters are pretty astute. Like, we know that nobody has it all together. So anyone who presents themselves that way, we have a sense of they're up to something, or we at least know this is a production. And so whenever we can see the true vulnerability, it increases our connection to people, because we can empathize with that, right? We can find a connection there. One of the stories that I tell leaders that they really need to get good at is called our failure is an asset, right? So tell me a story about a time when you really messed it up, right? When you thought something was going to work and it didn't. And then what about that taught you something that is really an asset for you now? Because that is a universal experience, right? We all have had these failures and missteps, but not everyone turns them into something that can really help them. And that's where you actually can set yourself apart as a leader to say, yes, I thought this was going to work. It didn't. And here's why I now know, here's why you can trust me through this process, because I've been in a place where I made the wrong call and I'm now prepared to make the right call.
Well, I would think closely related to that is the story about the opportunity that never happened, the school you didn't get into, or the job you didn't get, or even perhaps the job you got fired from. You know, you know, what are the reasons? And, you know, sometimes in those areas, you gotta be sensitive to not sounding like you're telling sour grape story, you know, but is there a takeaway that helped you develop a new set of skills or a new view of the world that is now pertinent to the current situation? And
exactly. Michael Jordan, you know, probably would not have been as amazing as he was at basketball if he hadn't been cut from his high school team, you know, like, so there's one sense to which that experience of failure, so to speak, helped make him the champion that he was. And also, he's never shied away from that story, like, because it makes him far more interesting and relatable, right? If he was just a success from the moment he was born, like, it's interesting sort of, but it's also kind of boring because it's so unachievable for everybody else. And so there's a way in which you can make yourself more relatable, and people will feel a sense of belonging in a place that they can connect, right? And so if, as a leader, you can help people feel connected, not just to the work or the culture or the vision, but to you also as a person, that's only going to improve your company's culture and to then improve your impact. And those stories that show, you don't have to bare your soul or spill your trauma out for everyone or tell your worst secrets, but moments where they can see the humanity. This is what this is really all about, is putting the humanity, I think, back into business. So much of it has been sort of siphoned out, right? Leave your emotions at home. Don't bring yourself, your full self, into work. And I think that there has been some detriment to that.
You know, what comes to my mind as you're saying that, and I'm going to go out on a limb and I'll probably get letters for what I'm getting ready to say, but another athlete that comes to mind, kind of the opposite of Michael Jordan, is Tiger Woods. Mm. When he first hit the scene, it was kind of this picture of perfection from the get-go. I mean, there were clips of him at 3 years old on the Tonight Show with Johnny Carson putting balls, you know, and what a phenom he already was. And it's like, and then, you know, he goes to Stanford, plays college golf there, nothing but reasonable accolades, at least in any news you could find. And for many years, as he was climbing the ladder, I said to my friends, I said, I fear for the young lad. I think he's wound too tight. There's got to be something in there. And of course, he still, you know, topped all the records and everything, but sure enough, you know,
he troubles, fell.
Troubles prevailed. And I applaud him for his effort at a comeback. I don't wish the guy ill will at all, but there's just something in his overall story that didn't connect. You know, maybe it was just me.
Yeah. Yeah. That would be interesting to kind of analyze a bit. What was it about his? I mean, people have a fascination with vulnerability and appreciation from it, but we also, it's a great fear of ours that our heroes will fall, right? We don't want to see people, fall off their pedestal and crash and burn. And especially the way in which Tiger did that, I think for many people, he lost people's respect. But there's also a degree with some of our stories is that we do want, there's a sense to which we want our leaders to feel relatable and to feel human. But then we have this whole other fascination with deity, right? There is like there's this love of the gods. It's been true of humans forever. And so you do find occasionally where there's a desire for someone to feel like a deity. And I think some people had that relationship with Tiger. He's the god of golf. And so when the deity is suddenly human and fallible, that becomes a problem for people. So there can be a limit, I think, to the relatability in terms of its effectiveness. But the Tiger Woods of the world are so, you know, so rare as to not in any way be a universal principle, I think. I think for most leaders, finding a way to say, I've been where you are, I've had my experiences of setbacks and difficulties, and then this is how it's made me actually the person that I am. The Michael Jordan story, I think, is going to be far more impactful.
I actually do have one of my own personal stories about Tiger Woods out on the golf course. I was he was playing in the tournament champions tournament in Houston a number of years ago, and I happened to be standing right at the rope, right where the tee shots were landing, and he had hit a shot a little bit to the left, which put it almost right at our feet at the rope. My son and I were standing there. We probably could have pulled on the rope and reached down and picked up his ball. That's how close it was.
Wow.
This was back when the caddy named Fluff was his caddy. So this is a number of years ago. But so they walked up, and they're talking about the shot. And they're talking about the difference between a 3-iron and a 4-iron. And Tiger goes, give me my 4-iron. And Fluff goes, you can't hit the 4-iron from here. And he said, give me my 4-iron. So he handed it to him, and he hit the shot, missed the green, you know, and all that. And he kind of slings it back at Fluff and storms off. And Fluff picks up the club just casually and starts wiping it off. And under his breath, he said, I told you you couldn't hit the 4-iron from here.
That's right.
Well,
we need those people to keep us in check.
At the end of that golf season, Fluff was let go as his caddy.
Yep. Yep.
But
that makes, it reminds me of some of those old myths of the kings that have their advisors and the advisors that speak the truth to them, but that they didn't want to hear. Never ends well for those advisors, you know?
Right. Right.
Yeah. So, yeah.
Well, good. Well, Michael, I'll tell you what, we're up on a break here. I want to take a quick pause, and then we'll get right back into this when we're back after this message.
Business is all about solving complex problems as fast as you can create them. Become the best problem solver by leading others to greatness, too. And the first step is going to DougThorpe.com. Doug Thorpe is known globally for coaching entrepreneurs and business leaders, improving their performance and the work output of everyone surrounding them. You can find health, wealth, and happiness by learning to lead others to health, wealth, and happiness. Go to DougThorpe.com now and order Doug's books or hire him to coach your managers. That's Doug, T-H-O-R-P-E.com.
Well, hello again, everyone. We're back, and I am talking with Michael McRae. We are talking about the significance and importance of being able to actually tell a good story if you are in a role of influence and leadership. So Michael, a lot of good information in that first half about the sort of principles of why it's important. But let's do the hard stuff right now. Let's really talk a little bit about how can someone who maybe historically has never been a particularly good storyteller or hasn't thought about it, how do they kind of get in the game? Where do they start, and what should they be thinking about?
Well, I think there are a couple of stories that's probably worth having in your toolbox if you're a leader. So we can maybe go over a couple of those. The first one we could call the leader with conviction. You know, this is sort of the origin story for you as a leader, and to be thinking through, why are you in the work that you're in, right? There's a reason for it. Think back to when this first began to interest you, to draw you in, to light up something in you. What's your connection to the work? And when you can find where that was for you, then the task is to bring us into the moment. Where a lot of leaders get, they lose folks, is that they go for the big overarching epic Lord of the Rings style narrative, right? They want to go big. But summary is not story. People are not compelled by summaries. The story is in the details. Like we think and we live, and so, well, we think often in generalities, but we live in details and specifics. That's where a story lies. So when the leader with conviction, we're looking for, when was it that you first started finding this sense of passion for what you're doing? And then bring us into the moment. Tell us specifically what was happening. Who was there? Who was talking? What were you saying? What were you thinking? And you can use that star model, you know, give us the situation, give us whatever this tension or the trouble was that was coming in. What was the challenge that you began to think through? What were the choices and actions that you took from that? And then how did it all end up? What's the result? So the leader with conviction would be one of the first stories that I would say you want to get good at. Another really important one for leaders is the power of our values. You know, so whatever work that you're in, you can be thinking, think about the values of your organization. What are you championing? Is that, sometimes it's kind of those general things like excellence or teamwork. Sometimes it's really specific. It's around people over profit, empathy over, I don't remember what all the values are of organizations, but there are all these different ways of talking through those. And what we to think through, what's a specific moment when you saw this being lived out? Right, that could be something that you experienced, that you were part of, or it could be a time when you saw one of your teammates doing that. You know, I could be like, oh, I want to tell you about Doug and something that Doug did. Doug really embodies collaboration as a value. You know, and a couple of weeks ago, you begin to get into the moment of telling this specific experience where you saw this value being lived out. And I think one of the things that a lot of leaders fear is that they're thinking, I don't have the time to be telling stories a lot. And they have this sense that storytelling is going to be like, you know, The Moth or like some other big storytelling production where you're like 15, 20 minutes on a single story. But leadership storytelling is done pretty quickly, you know. So most often, stories that you're going to be telling are 60 to 90 seconds. You know, they're pretty quick. In fact, I often encourage people to have kind of the 2-minute version, the 1-minute version, the 30-second version, and the 5-second version, you know, and it's the kind of thing where you can give somebody a sentence and they can say, that's fascinating. Tell me more about that. And you can go into the 30-second version, then you can go into the 60 and into the 90-second version. And essentially with that star model, the situation, tension, action, result, you can work on getting your story into 4 sentences, right? You can practice giving a single sentence for each of those things and getting to the real heart of it. And so I think using that star model is going to be really helpful for you all as you're trying to build out your stories. And then in terms of the types of stories to tell, I would start by working really on getting a clear sense of how to articulate a leader with conviction. Who are you in your work and why are you here? And then the power of our values. What is it that you care about and the work cares about? And then tell us a specific story of that being lived out.
You know, this this topic is definitely a good one and a powerful one. And I want to interject. I want to encourage our listeners to look at another episode. It's number 16 on the series here just a few weeks ago. Another guest I had has written a book called The 7 Essential Stories Charismatic Leaders Tell. And it's very similar. When I met the gentleman's name is Kurian Therikon, and he's out of Canada, and he was describing the 7 stories, and I said, well, even as a leader, I've known about 2 of them, and you've articulated 2 of them, And I said, well, now you've enlightened me of five others that I haven't heard about. His list includes the origin story and the success aspect. He calls it why we're going to win. And then there's a couple more in between that have to do with the fight we're going to face, and maybe that's more about the tensions that are around us, and then the changing of the wind that might be around you. That's another force, especially if you're leading in a company or a situation where the market is shifting pretty radically.
Yeah.
You can create a story around those changing winds and why there's a need to move forward and move on. So,
you know, just on that, if I can chime in there, I mean, I think one of the things that could be helpful for folks is I know that change management has become like an essential skill, right, of 21st century leadership, especially now in this age of COVID. You know, David Cooperrider in Appreciative Inquiry talks about that there are three things that people always need in times of change. They need to know the novelty. What is the new thing that's coming? Like, what is the change that we're going to have? The continuity. What about what we have now is going to stay the same? Is there anything that we can take from the old story into the new story? And then transition. How are we actually going to navigate this move? And so I think there's opportunities to tell stories about each of those in the sense that the novelty story is the vision story, right? This is, imagine if we had this here. And sometimes with leaders, they will go to other organizations to tell that story. You know, so if I'm in a tech company at VMware, I may say, I want to tell you about something that I heard that Google is doing, right? And you tell this story about something Google, and then you're ending it with, imagine if we had that here. Imagine if we, with our team and our talents, had that same model, right? So you paint the vision of where you're going. That's the novelty story. The continuity story can be this, often called the, it was true at the beginning, right? There's something about who we are that was true at the beginning. And no matter how many times we have to shift and change in the winds, this thing is going to hold us steady, right? This is our anchor. And you tell a story that shows the truth of this core of who you are. And then you have the transition stories, the stories that show what does it look like when we're actually doing this thing. And that's where you want to tell the stories that are holding up the behavior that you want to see. If you're thinking, you know what, in this time of change, I think we're going to lose our focus on collaboration, then I'm going to tell a story of a time when in another period of change, I saw a team hold to that. And I'm going to say, let me tell you about what Team X did. You remember how they worked through this? Think of that collaboration, right? And I begin to hold up that transition story. So novelty, continuity, and transition are three things that have to be there in change management. And if you can find really powerful short stories to kind of lead with those, I think you're going to have a really effective engagement with that process.
Give us another maybe scenario if you can, either from, you know, your own experience working with a company and, you know, I don't want you to break confidence or name names, but is there another kind of evolutionary opportunity you can share about how you got some leader focused on how to tell a better story?
Yeah, well, I remember once I was working with a nonprofit that does a lot of literacy work with young adults. And we were doing a kind of a story circle session where they were practicing telling stories to one another, but also trying to think of stories. So we're doing a process called story mining, where we were looking at some of these different types of the power of our values or the leader with conviction, these types of stories, and trying to think through all the different possibilities that could come up. And at one point, somebody brought up a story and said, you know, I remember this one time that there, we were doing this fundraiser, I think it was, and we kind of had this call for people to donate on the night of, and this little kid walked up, she was five, and she came up with a handwritten card, and she handed us the card, and she had just aged out of our program, so she couldn't receive books anymore, she was 5 years old, and so she handed us a card, and it said, inside it said, thank you with the letter U, right? Just like, you know, thank and the letter U. And there was a $5 bill. And she had saved up her allowance to give the $5 to us so that she could help other little kids get the same kind of books that she got. And there was this really it was this really moving story. And I kind of looked around the room and I was like, how many of you all knew that story? And nobody raised their hands. And I was like, think about the impact of that story. And immediately the conversation shifted to this whole fundraising campaign. And I think the girl's name was Amanda or something. And it was like, if Amanda can do it, you can do it. And it was this $5 campaign of just like, what if we get everyone to donate $5 to match Amanda's donation? And so there was this incredible shift that happened in the room where they were going from, this is an interesting exercise in like how to tell stories, to thinking, we have hundreds probably of golden story assets in our work that we have never taken the time to actually find. And what if we slow down long enough to do some of these processes to find these narrative assets that we have and then figure out how to mobilize them into campaigns, into presentations for aligning our team around a vision, or incorporating them into presentations to potential clients that show the impact of our work. And so it was one of those moments where you don't always get those, but where you could see like they're like the scales are falling from their eyes, right? And they're like, oh, this is what this can be.
Yeah. That's great. That is so true. And I think anybody that's been in business a while has those kind of stories to tell. And as you were describing that, I dialed back in my own history. The regional bank I went to work for was one of the first of its kind that I knew of at the time. And I'm talking in the like early 80s. We ran TV commercials of our bankers out with our customers out. You know, we were a business bank, you know, a commercial bank more than a personal bank for, you know, car loans and boat loans and stuff. We did business loans. And we ran for years, we ran a whole series of our bankers out in the warehouse or in the mill or the shop or the studio, you know, handling materials and talking to the owners. And they, I mean, these were real stories of customers that were part of our bank. And it was an award-winning campaign, but more importantly, it really got people's attention that, hey, these guys don't just sit behind their desk in their, you know, blue Brooks Brothers suits. They roll up their sleeves and come out to where I really do my work. And they are, you know, I value that. I need that. And I can then if my banker ever tells me no, I know there's a really good reason he said no. And, yeah. And you know, we got all kinds of response from that, plus and minus, and I meant minus in a good way. Like I said, people kind of realized that we were there for them, and we kind of built a whole brand around being able to do that.
Yeah, I mean, one of the, you know, Southwest Airlines is an organization that I think does storytelling actually really well, both externally, which most people know about, but internally as well. I mean, I met a person that was in charge of training for Southwest, and she talked about how when you join Southwest, you know, the typical, you know, expectation would be you get this sort of manual with, here's what we expect from you at Southwest, here are the values of Southwest, all this kind of stuff. But what most people get is a video series. And in the video series are it's a series of 2-minute stories from customers and from employees, of the actual people telling their own stories, of, you know, for instance, a woman who was dropping with her kids, she was dropping her husband off at the airport for him to be deployed to go to Iraq, and about the sadness of the kids as they were watching their dad get on the plane and how they were just, you know, they were aching. And one of the Southwest employees came up, tapped her on the shoulder and said, you know, is there anything I can do? And she thought, what on earth could you do? And she said, you know, the employee said, well, what if I could get you on the plane? And so they were able to arrange for the kids and the mom to get on the plane, and they called over the loudspeaker for their dad, and he raised his hand, and the kids ran down the you know, ran through the airplane and gave their dad one last hug. And there was and it was this beautiful story that told. And whenever I always show this the video clip to the organizations that I work with, and I ask them, what would you say Southwest is trying to communicate to their employees? And immediately people are like, you know, that people are more important than, you know, policy, that sometimes you got to break the rules to take care of the customer. Customer is most important. Here we care. Be on the lookout. Right? All of these things. And I'm thinking, right. And they did that in literally 2 minutes. And if Southwest had just said, hey, at Southwest, please read this and learn that Southwest cares about its customers. Remember, when you're at Southwest, you need to be on the lookout for opportunities to have. Nobody would remember that stuff once they read the whole manual, but yeah, they will never forget that story and the lessons that are embedded in there that nobody had to say out loud. You just received them. And that's what I think is possible when you get good at this.
Yeah. Well, it's funny you mentioned Southwest. I have my own connection there. Herb Kelleher, one of their, you know, founding officers, was on our board at the bank I mentioned.
Oh, wow.
So he showed up frequently for our officer meetings. And one day we were talking and somebody asked him the question about customer service. You know, specifically, is the customer always right? And he says, heck no. And he said, and was quick about it. Heck no, the customer's not always right. And we all went, well, what do you mean? And he told a story up at their hub in Dallas, which was notorious for having trouble when the weather went bad and planes getting backed up and delayed and all that. And there was one part of the terminal where three different gates converged in one little sitting area. So it was high traffic, heavy density, and with all the planes backed up, it was just packed. And there was one customer that was incredibly inebriated. And I mean, he was not happy about the delays and he was letting everybody know it, the gate agents, the customer, other customers. And he would come and go with his tirades. And finally, when the plane came and it was time to board, you know, he bullies his way to the front of the line and there's three Dallas police officers waiting for him and they grab him and cuff him and drag him out of the terminal in front of probably 600 people and everybody's clapping, you know.
Wow.
And Herb said, he goes, now, he said, we made one customer really mad that day. He said, but we endeared 600 others because that guy did not need to be on a plane.
Wow.
And,
wow.
So, you know,
let me ask you, Doug, how long ago did Herb tell you that story?
Oh, that was probably in the late 80s.
I mean, okay.
It's been a while. It's before TSA and a lot of other stuff.
No, you know? My point is he told you that story 30, 35 years ago and you still remember it, right? Yeah. Vividly. That's my point, right? Like if you have messages that you want your people to remember, you put them in stories, right? Like if Herba just said, sometimes in the organization, you've got to take care of the larger group and sacrifice a smaller, people would be like, okay, that wouldn't stick with you. But you tell that story and 30, 35 years later, you can still remember it. And you told it in such a way that people couldn't see my face. But like, I was with you. I was locked in. I wanted to know what was going to happen. Like this is a perfect illustration of what I'm talking about, right? We cannot help but get hooked by a good story. And that story, the details of that, because stories are about specifics. We see those in our minds. We can see the whole, like I was imagining what this guy looked like. For whatever reason, he had a hat on to me, right? Like I was painting a whole picture of the guy. And that's what makes it stick. And so harnessing the power of this will absolutely revolutionize your impact as a leader.
And Michael, I think that's a great word to kind of bring this show to a close. This has been phenomenal. Two things to ask you as we close here. Number one, what's the best way people can get a hold of you if they're looking for more information?
My website, michaelmcray.com. That's M-C-R-A-Y.
All right. And we will have that in the show notes, folks. And I want to remind everybody that's listening to us on audio that we do have a video version of this show over on my YouTube channel, same title, Leadership Powered by Common Sense. We'll have all the information there and we will have that link in the show notes as we publish them here. Michael, any last closing words you want to share?
Just to encourage people to remember that this is a capability you already have. Everyone tells stories to their friends, to their kids, to their spouses, right? You've got an ability to talk about the things that have happened in your life. And this is just turning the attention to work and knowing that you can radically increase your impact if you will harness the power of narrative. So I hope this has been helpful.
Well said. Yes, I do truly think it has been helpful. So folks, we're continuing our effort to try to take the complex and uncertain and volatile world around us in business and turn it into some simple, more common sense ideas. And that's why I have the title of the show as Leadership Powered by Common Sense. So thank you for listening in. Look forward to seeing you again soon. Bye-bye.
You've been listening to Leadership Powered by Common Sense, hosted by Doug Thorpe. If you would like to know more about the coaching and advisory services he provides, visit DougThorpe.com.